Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast, episode 134. And the subject of this week is grossest medieval foods that medieval people actually ate. Yeah, well, Robin, what did you have for dinner tonight?
Oh, good question. I had a homemade smoked tofu and bean chili.
Oh, damn. That sounds good. That sounds good. Thanks, but maybe, maybe in a few hundred years, do you ever worry that people in a few hundred years will look back at that and think, oh my God, how, what?
Why, all the time.
Why would they eat that? That's disgusting.
It's my number one concern on a daily basis. People are going to look back at pretty much everything I do and just think, what a weird thing to do. And to me, it's perfectly normal. Well, what did you have for dinner? And was it weird?
No, I had a beige classic, an absolute beige dinner. just, no, chicken fingers and chips. It was, quality.
Delicious.
Quality. But delicious. Also not very nutritious. But today, we're going to see if we can beat that and discuss some of the weirder foods that they were to eat in medieval, well, from all over the world, I guess. So come with us. Let's tantalize your taste buds. And we'll jump into it in a little bit. But first, Robin, did you want a riddle?
Oh, I love a riddle.
You're gonna,
please.
I know already that you're going to love this one. This is a great one that is going to be right up your street.
That's code for I'm going to hate it. That's what that is.
What? No, I don't know what you mean.
I don't trust you.
Okay. I don't even, this might be quite easy, actually. I don't know. Here you go. Mm-hmm. Riddle me this. If I'm holding a bee, what do I have in my eye?
What?
If I'm holding a bee, what do I have in my eye? Think about that for a second, and I'll let you know what the answer is at the end of the podcast. But if you do know the answer and you're watching us on YouTube, then let us know in the comments down below. And whilst we're on the subject of YouTube, I just wanted to give a massive thank you to everyone who's supporting us on Patreon. Robin, you don't look impressed right now. You look super confused.
Really, thrown by that riddle. That's a weird one.
Well, whilst you think about that, I want to thank everyone that's supporting us over on Patreon or as a YouTube member on our YouTube channel. So I'd like to, in particular, thank Captain Wonky, James, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapier. That's right. I'm committing to it. I'm going to say Tapier instead of Tapia. Ahmad Peaswood, Josh Chomatek, A Filthy Casual, and the one and only Simon Workman. Thank you, all of you, so much. You are the lifeblood of this channel, and you keep us going. So thank you.
And thank you.
Always goes without saying, if you did want to support us on Patreon, then feel free. No pressure. But you do get over 100 episodes of bonus episodes if you can't get enough of us, as well as some behind the scenes exclusive features of what we've got coming up. Robin, before we jump into the main topic, did you have any favorite comments that you wanted to talk about from the last week? I feel like I've done all of the talking so far, so what have you got for us?
Oh, no, don't worry about it. I've been having a great time listening to your lovely voice. It's a pleasure, as always. I do have a couple of comments from the last couple of episodes, actually. So there's a comment by Corey German 6638 on films that predicted the future.
Oh, yeah.
Which had a glorious thumbnail of the Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, it's a fantastic, fantastic film.
Amazing.
And predicted the future, so, yeah.
I mean, yeah, a historically significant film.
The Shawshank Redemption can't say that, so, yeah.
It's true, actually. Yeah. Suddenly, Alex, you know, Shawshank Redemption's taken down a few notches on my all-time greatest films list. Predicted nothing. Didn't even predict accurately what Morgan Freeman would look like when he was 60-odd years old.
Oh, yeah.
A few grey hairs, that's all he had in the film. Gosh. Anyway, I don't know where I'm going with that. Corey German 6638 says, had to pull over the car to comment this, so thank you. Safe driving. Very wise.
Yes.
Shock Treatment is not a sequel, it's an equal. Kind of like how some TV shows have episodes that are independent storylines. Also an effing amazing film. Awesome. Nice to meet a fellow fan, but also I'd not heard that before, but I like that idea of films that aren't so much sequels as companion pieces to whatever the original was.
Mm. Are there any other examples you can think of that fit that?
I know you'd ask me this. I should have come prepared, shouldn't I?
What about, I mean, it is a sequel, but what about like Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2? Because they're almost like, they're quite different styles almost, but they work together very well.
See,
they, I mean, they are just point, straight, yeah. It is a sequel though.
Yeah, it's the same story. It's the conclusion. Yeah. Volume 2 is the conclusion to the story that began in Volume 1. But you're right, stylistically, they're very different. Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think it's kind of like, it's not a sequel per se, but there, do you remember, have you ever seen A Fish Called Wanda with John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Kline, and Michael Palin?
No.
Fantastic comedy from the 80s, like legendary. I think John Cleese won the Best Original Screenplay Oscar for it.
Hmm.
And they teamed up 10 years later in the 90s to make a film called Fierce Creatures. Same cast, same writer, John Cleese. Completely separate film, but it's kind of a sequel because like, yeah. They're playing basically the same characters again. And that was called Fierce Creatures. And that's kind of an equal in the way that Shock Treatment is unequal. As in, but the difference is that with Shock Treatment, it's the same characters returning, but completely different actors and in a plot that has nothing to do with the first film. Whereas Fierce Creatures is kind of a same actors playing similar, but not technically the same characters in a similar situation to A Fish Called Wanda. So that's
almost like those anthology series that you get with TV shows.
Yeah.
So like the same actors come back, but they're playing different characters, different setting. Yeah,
as you said that, I just thought The Muppets, The Muppet movies.
Oh, of course. Yeah, The Muppets, great example. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all kind of sequels, but not really sequels because nothing carries over.
Yeah. Or also, I mean, it's kind of not quite the same, but I want to say it anyway, just to get it in. The Fast and Furious films and Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. So there you go. They're basically different characters in that film.
Yeah, that's true. Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah.
It's got Ryan Reynolds in it. It's got Rob Delaney.
I forgot he's in that. Yeah. Yeah, bizarre. Hobbs and Shaw is like an all-out comedy.
It's got Kevin Hart.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just
Yeah.
Different, completely different. And it's got Superman, Black Superman, hasn't it?
Idris Elba playing Brixton as the baddie. Fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
What a film. Go and watch it. This podcast is brought to you by Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. No, we're not, sadly. Sadly, we're not. But if...
I would that we were.
If The Rock or Vin Diesel are watching, then please reach out. Please.
Yeah,
please reach out. Please. I'm just putting it out there. Please do.
What comments would you like to draw attention to, respond to?
Well, I've got another comment from predictions, you know, films that predicted the future from Desolator Magic, who says the best prediction of the future was Idiocracy, the film by, I always get this mixed up. Was it Mike Judge or was it, no, it was the guy who did Don't Look Up, John something McKay, Adam McKay?
Yeah.
I get those two mixed up for some reason. I don't know why.
Interesting.
Who did Idiocracy?
Mike Judge.
Oh, it was Mike Judge. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was Mike Judge. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that? I wanted to raise that.
That was a great shout. Yeah.
As a prediction of the future, would you say Idiocracy? Or are you not that, that pessimistic?
I think that's the thing. How do you judge it? Because obviously it predicts a future, 500 years from now or something? Or 500 years from whenever it was made in the noughties. So technically it's not predicting the future because it's kind of come true already.
Already.
except that we were discussing what the fine line between actually predicting the future and just being a clever observer of what's going on right now. And I feel like Idiocracy was just clever observation of... society and how terrible it is in general, right?
Before I saw that, I'd always thought in my head that Idiocracy was kind of like, I thought it was based on a book and I thought it was like a classic book. I thought it was like a 1984 Fahrenheit 451,
right,
Brave New World, Idiocracy. I thought it was in that same category as that. I didn't realize that was just a Mike Judge film. Because I always see it in discussions, like in that same kind of arena with those other those other things. Yeah. Definitely. And in many ways, Idiocracy is kind of more optimistic than, like, in Idiocracy, the president, Camacho, Terry Crews' character, he's smart enough to realize that they're all idiots and they need to find the smartest person in the room. That's more than you could say for the politicians these days.
That is absolutely more.
There you go. That's my hot take of the podcast.
Well, one thing I learned the other week, which would have been, I guess, this week we learned, possibly, was the RoboCop 2. Everyone loves that film.
Yeah, sure, sure.
The original, the writers from RoboCop 1 did not come back for RoboCop 2, but they did write a script that the studio rejected. And in that script, they had a reality TV show host get elected president.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was so famous at the, in the industry that in 2016, when a certain person became president, the studios came back to the writers and said, you know that script you wrote for RoboCop 2 back in 1990 that we rejected?
Mm.
Can we have a look at that again? Would you like to make a RoboCop sequel now? As it happens, nothing's happened with that because of all complicated copyright reasons. But yeah, that's a similar thing where just being smart and cynical about politics, I think, can lead you to making accurate predictions.
But also, was that a prediction? Because Ronald Reagan was an actor.
Yeah, it's not exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah, I think that's a cynical response to it. If Ronald Reagan can become president, then who else could become president? Yeah. But I would like to just respond to one comment on last week's podcast, which was about strange cases that might prove reincarnation.
Oh, yeah.
I love this comment because it just made me laugh. From Beck RR, who says about these children who are claiming to be the reincarnated people from the past. And Beck says, yeah, but do these kid reincarnees, great word, by the way, do they ever remember if they paid tax or anything else about adult life? I thought, that's such a great question. They remember all these things about ancient buildings, what that they saw in dreams and getting murdered, but they don't seem to remember the mundane stuff. Like, well, if you were an adult in a past life, maybe you could make dinner tonight, kid. maybe you could fix the car. No, apparently not.
But maybe there's a kind of, I kind of believe that though, don't they? They say like when you're on your deathbed, you never wish that you worked more, do you? So
that's true. Yeah.
So like, yeah, maybe you would only, you wouldn't remember that stuff, would you? That's not the kind of stuff you take with you to the next life.
Yeah.
The bit where you mindlessly scrolled through TikTok for 12 hours. What? I didn't, what? Don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, don't make me think about that. No, Alex, no.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for those comments and do keep them coming in. We genuinely love reading them. What's a good comment that we can, what's a good thing we can ask the audience, Robin?
Yeah. Which technology in movies or TV or books that doesn't exist do you wish could exist?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, with that in mind, can I just read one more comment because it's so relevant to that?
Yeah.
And this is from NanoGlitch6393. Oh, no, sorry, 6693. He says, I'm extremely disappointed that our hoverboards are nothing like the ones in Back to the Future. I blame Marty McFly for messing up the timelines that resulted in this travesty. And I think that would be my answer. Yeah. Where are the hoverboards?
Yeah.
And I know, yes, Clever Clogs, there are a few people that have made hoverboards, but not really, are they?
They're not real. Yeah.
They're like one, not even a centimetre off the ground, 1 millimetre off the ground. It doesn't count, does it? That's not what people want. Where are the Back to the Future hoverboards? But yeah, no, that's a great question. So answer that in the comments down below. Or if you fancy leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you're listening to that lets you, then feel free. Yeah, and we love reading those as well. And hopefully we'll get to read some of those out in the upcoming weeks. So Robin, would you like to discuss gross medieval cuisines?
Oh, yes, please.
So what did you have on your list? Where did you take me on a taste sensation, Robin?
Ooh. Well, there's a theme to the recipes that I want to talk about. And I invite our listeners and people watching us on YouTube to try to figure out the common thing that connects the three recipes that I've got in mind that I'd like to discuss. But the first one is the cockatrice.
The what?
And this is...
Say that again. So,
cockatrice.
Okay.
Hello, hello. Not what you think it is. Some people may have heard of this mythical beast, the cockatrice. I think actually it's in Harry Potter, isn't it? And this is a recipe that is definitely kind of wish fulfillment, I guess, by some very wealthy and powerful person who tells their chef, because of course, well, we've got to have a chef in the first place, make me a cockatrice so I can eat it. So a cockatrice is a dish that is a suckling pig's upper body, or lower body, actually, half of a suckling pig. And a suckling pig is...
Either half, doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter for this. It's a pig that's slaughtered within 2 to 6 weeks old, and it's only fed on the milk of its mother. And it's that suckling pig, half of their body, sewn onto half of a chicken or turkey.
Mm.
If it's a chicken, it's specifically a castrated cockerel or rooster.
It has to be a male chicken. Get those hens out of here.
And neutered, yeah.
Right.
I don't know why, but it has to be, apparently. And you baste it in a mixture of egg yolk and saffron, which is, you know, saffron's not a flavor that I like, so I don't know why they were so popular, but it was. And then you roast it, or spit roast it, and cover it with gold foil. And some recipes mention having gold on the inside as well.
Okay. Okay, this sounds like something that who's Salt Bae's restaurants would do. Did they sell this for like 50,000 gold coins?
Yeah,
for like an overcooked chicken, undercooked pork.
So there's this may apparently the. This is very reminiscent of modern cooking in the way there's a dish called turducken, I think, in Canada,
right,
which is where you've got, was it a pigeon or a duck inside a...
Inside a chicken inside a turkey or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just sick. But the cockatrice is, it's kind of, it's weird because it's just bizarre, like sewing two halves of some very specific animals together. To make a dish and just eating the whole thing with gold.
It's almost like reminiscent of, have you seen in, there's a museum in London that has it, and it's like a curiosity, and they sew together like a monkey onto a fish and just have its skeleton. And it was meant to be like a real life merman, you know? I think it's in the Horniman Museum in London. And
Horniman.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There we go. But it's almost reminiscent of that. They just sew animals together to make, I don't know, something that looks fancy, but in reality, it doesn't look fancy. It looks like half a chicken sewed onto the back half of a pig, you know.
Yeah.
It's not the Mona Lisa, mate. It's, what are you doing? No.
It's quite obvious. The joining line is quite obvious. You've got white meat meeting red meat. It's just not, it doesn't match.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, would you give it a try?
What have you got? Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, of the dishes that I'm bringing to this episode, this is the one that I would probably eat.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I'm going to be honest with you, Robin. Nothing about it seems that offensive unless you're a vegetarian.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
You know,
which I am.
You said you're not a fan of saffron, but I mean, hey, there's nothing gross about saffron. It's fine. It's, you know, whatever.
I'm just mad about saffron. Saffron's mad about me.
Okay, well, you know, we're not going to have paella on the list, so that can't be the reason it's there. I think the grotesqueness of just sewing two things together.
I think that's it. It's just this is kind of sadistic. Mm. I think it just takes it a little bit too far for me.
Fair enough. But,
what recipes would you like to talk about?
Well, I mean, it's more of just an ingredient in this. I don't know what they would serve this with as a medieval in a medieval meal. But one animal that they would eat that I just cannot imagine eating is a lamprey. Have you ever seen lamprey? They're kind of like eels.
They've got their... but they're like teeth.
Rows and rows of teeth. It looks kind of like the massive worm thing that Andy Serkis gets eaten by in Peter Jackson's King Kong film.
Yes.
So 2005.
Yeah.
King Kong film. Yeah. That's basically a lamprey, is a smaller version of that.
Or it looks like the kind of thing that a B movie 80s horror film would invent.
It's like, you know, a chest burster type thing.
It's a deadly dildo. That's what it looks like. you wouldn't want to.
Exactly.
Or reverse dildo, I suppose.
It has like a suction cup like face. It's almost like a leech. And it sucks blood of other larger fish. So
of course you look at that thing and you think,
delicious.
That gray thing that's like a tube full of teeth, I'll eat that.
But I mean, back in the Middle Ages, lamprey was considered a delicacy and
because no one wanted to eat it. So.
And was most often eaten on meatless days. You know, they're back in, you know, medieval times.
I see.
They're meatless Mondays. Right. They were like, oh, okay, lamprey doesn't count though, does it? Let's chew on some...
that weird thing.
Chomp on some lamprey. And apparently it's said that King Henry I of England ate lamprey so often that his death was, in fact, the result of him overindulging in this quite hideous fish. I was kind of like hesitant to bring this one up because it is also, you know, enjoyed in certain cuisines around the world today. And I mean, I guess it's kind of not too dissimilar to like eel, and people eat eel. We over here in this country, we still eat jellied eel, which is another example of like
gross
cuisine that they had in medieval times. But yeah, I mean, in Portugal, I think this is... they have Portuguese lamprey rice. In Japan, they consume this as well. So it's still consumed in different parts of the world. But I mean, just look at it. Just look at it.
Just horrendous.
I'm assuming that you don't eat the teeth, though. Because, oh my God. It looks like a horror film thing. I mean, I'll be honest, Robin. My list of things is basically... a list of different animals that they would eat. So what have you got? So that's my running theme.
Yeah. Just weird animals that you wouldn't eat today, but apparently they did.
They did back then, yeah.
Well, my second one is just... oh, I'll just launch into it. How would you feel about filling your mouth with a sheep's penis?
I wouldn't feel really great about it, to be honest, Robin. I think I can be honest about that. I don't like the sound of that. No, I mean, that's the kind of thing they do on a Bush Tucker trial on I'm a Celebrity. But not really. Yeah. No, I think I'll pass.
Yeah. So there's a Dutch cookery book from, I think, the 15th century that has a recipe for sheep's penis, which is... I'll just read it out loud.
Okay.
In translation, obviously not in Dutch. I can't speak Dutch.
Okay.
Which is sheep's penis for the foodie. Wash it well. Good start. And turn them inside out. Then take ground saffron, the yolks of 10 eggs, and a spoonful
saffron
of milk.
Again. You just don't like saffron. Is that the theme
like
of
saffron.
Yours?
That's the theme. That's it. No, it's not saffron. Not intentionally, anyway. So you take your 10 egg yolks and a spoonful of milk and saffron, temper with fat, and stuff the penis, but take care that it's not overstuffed. Blanch it, then roast it. Sprinkle it with a powder of ginger, cinnamon, and a little pepper. And then there you go.
You've really got to mask the flavor of it, is what I'm getting from this recipe. I mean, you've really got to hide it in like.
Well, so it starts
everything.
With wash it well, again, very wise, turn them inside out, and then stuff them. And I'm just like, have you like scraped out the penis? How is this working? How can you stuff it? Turn it inside out and stuff it. It's like a...
There's only I'm one struggling. Way to find out. So stick around for our Patreon exclusive episode where Robin makes and consumes the sheep's penis with lots of saffron. So much saffron. No, we can't afford that. It's really expensive. Really expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. And ginger and cinnamon just to top it off, which is a weird kind of sweet, spicy flavor.
They loved putting cinnamon in things when it wasn't really appropriate and wasn't Christmas, didn't they? Yeah.
Really not. Yeah. Imagine that. A nice glass of mulled wine and a stuffed sheep's penis.
Mm-mm. That's a hearty dinner.
Would you eat that?
No, Robert. Not especially, no. No, I can't say I would. I'd rather have the lamprey. I'll take the scary mouthful of teeth over that. I think that's the worst one so far.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I think so too.
You're welcome.
So what's yours? What's your next one?
Well, you know how they say that, well, I mean, I don't know if they say this, but when the end of the world happens and, you know, humanity is no more, what animal would inherit the earth? Some people think that it would be the house cat, because they're fantastic hunters. They're pests, basically. And they're kind of like, you know, without our intervention, they do quite well in the wild, you know.
That's true. They're the one domesticated animal that can easily do without us.
Yeah. So I say we turn the tables, and in a Mad Max scenario, we go back to what medieval people knew, and that was how to roast a cat. Yeah, so would you like to hear this medieval recipe of how you roast a cat?
Yes. I think so.
So here you go. Roast cat as you wish to eat it. You will take a cat that is fat and decapitate it.
Oh.
And after it is dead, cut off the head and throw it away, because it's not for eating. It's not for eating. For they say...
Oh, we got some standards. Yeah. Don't eat the head. Well, don't leave the head alone.
Well, they say that eating the brains cause him who eats them to lose his senses and judgment. They did a study of this as well. And I think there is actually some truth to that. Like, I don't...
What, eating cat brains?
Not cat brains, but brains in general. There's something in brains that... I know brain, like sheep's brain and stuff, is a delicacy in some parts of the world. But apparently it can have like... There's something that can be transmitted through that kind of is like a brain eating bacteria or something. I'm not making that up, and I didn't get it some from like Facebook or something. I remember learning about it in school. But yeah,
wow.
Someone fact check that in the comments, because I've just put that out there. I didn't look this up beforehand. But it's interesting that they said that in this recipe. The next part, then flay it very cleanly. And open it and clean it well. There it is again. Clean it well. And then wrap it in a cloth of clean linen. And bury it beneath the ground where it must be for a day and a night. And then, you know, you gotta let it wait for a day and a night. Put it, stick it in the fridge for a day. That's when it's best. Let the meat tenderize and open up.
I guess. I guess that's the equivalent. Burying it under the ground is like putting it in the fridge, I guess, to them. Yeah.
It's got to get a few worms in there. It's got to get a few worms in there.
Oh, no.
A little bit of dust gives it that satisfying earthy flavor.
Let it decompose just a little bit.
Mm.
Oh, disgusting.
Then take it out and roast it on a spit. Roast it over the fire. And when beginning to roast it, grease it with good garlic and oil, which, you know, okay, that's the best thing in this recipe so far.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's how all my cooking starts, garlic and oil. Yeah, so...
I don't know why I like this, but when you finish greasing it, whip it with a green twig. I don't know what that accomplishes.
Where did that come from?
And this must be done before it is well roasted. Greasing it and whipping it. Whip it with a green twig.
This is weird.
When it's roasted, cut it as if it were a rabbit and put it on a big plate.
Sorry. I know what they mean. What they mean is the way you slice rabbit.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
But it's just, it sounds so kind of vicious. Just like, cut it as if it were a rabbit.
Yeah. Yeah. Do what you do to it as if it was a rabbit. Yeah. But no, yeah, I get what
your French girls.
I get what they mean. I get what they mean. Like, you cut it in the same way.
Yeah.
Because I guess, you know, anyone who's cooking this has also done a rabbit. Yeah.
I guess. I mean, what happens next?
Well, then you put it on a big plate, take garlic and oil blended with good broth in such a manner that it is well thinned, and cast it like a nice gravy, I guess, almost. Meaty, oily, garlicky jus, and cast it over the cat. And you may eat of it because it is very good food. You can tell that this was translated, this recipe. And you may eat of it because it is very good food. So that is how you roast a cat, Robin. Would you give it a go?
I mean, no, I don't want to eat cats. I really don't.
So you go back in time and someone's lovingly prepared this for you. You're hungry as well. You haven't had anything since you time traveled back, because obviously no one understands a word of what you're saying. Someone puts this down in front of you. It's a delicacy, and you're just not gonna even try it.
Okay, I will say this, because it's roasted meat.
Yeah.
And it even has some instructions for presentation there from the sound of it. It sounds like it would look fantastic and smell really good. Garlic, oil, roast meat, perfect. However, once you explain to me that it started by skinning a cat and burying it in the ground for a day and a half, and then whipping it, I think, no.
The whipping it is where you draw the line.
No, I draw the line at the whole burying it in the ground for
not the and fact, then whipping it. Not the fact that it's a cat. I think that says,
also
that, says a
also
lot.
The cat, yeah. I don't really want to eat a cat. I like the fact that it's, because my first question when you said, do you want to hear the recipe for a roast cat? I immediately was going to say, cats don't have much meat on them. And I like the fact that it began with, take a fat cat.
Has to be a fat cat, yeah.
Has to be
a if fat it's cat. Not fat, then there's no point.
Yeah, no point, mate. So I guess, do you think they bred cats particularly for this? No, fat cats? Do you think they...
Can you breed fat cats?
I mean fed. Do you think they...
Like farmed them?
Yeah, that's the word, farmed. Do you think they did?
I wouldn't think that they did. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I can't imagine they're a great animal to farm. Great to have like... on a farm because they clear out the pests.
That's true.
Maybe this was more of a, you know, in the harsh winters when there wasn't much food around, they'd resort to this. This wasn't their first choice, I'd guess.
I think you're right. I think that makes sense. It's an act of desperation. But also, as you said at the beginning in your preface, a recognition that cats don't deserve to live just as much as every other animal.
Yeah, I suppose. But good also, food. I mean, you seem pretty defensive on the killing and eating cats there, Robin. Cat killer alert!
Well, as we know, I have the Pope on my side, or a Pope on my side, from the video Martin made all the way back a couple of years ago about killing black cats.
Yeah, indeed. Well, are there any more that you've got for me?
Yeah, I have one more. I'd love to know what you think of this. I don't know if you have come across this. You probably may have done. Have you ever tried cock ale?
Cock ale.
Cock ale.
Yeah, no, that's my favorite drink. What do you think I'm drinking right now, Robin? No, I haven't. Please tell me more.
Well, apparently this is a popular...
Is it piss?
British... It's not, but actually it does sound like a euphemism for that, doesn't it? cock ale seems to go back to the mid 17th century in England. It's an English dish, classic, as everyone knows. Everyone loves this. And there's a couple of recipes here, actually. So we'll compare the two, if you don't mind. Digby's Guide from 1669 says... Take 8 gallons of ale, take a cock, a chicken, but a male one, and boil him well. Then take 4 pounds of raisins, well stoned, as in
yeah,
D stone.
Well, stone. Keep all the stones in that. I want mate. Get your stoniest raisins.
Two or three nutmegs, three or four flakes of mace, half a pound of dates. Beat these all in a mortar and put to them 2 quarts of the best sack. And sack isn't a sack. It's a special type of fortified white wine from Spain or the Canary Islands. Mm. They're very specific.
Yeah, that is specific. I wonder how many people would have access to that in their larder.
Yeah. And the recipe says, when the ale hath done working, put these in and stop it closed 6 or 7 days, and then bottle it, and a month after you may drink it.
Sounds delicious.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds great. Here's another recipe. Take 10 gallons of ale and a large cock, the older the better.
Well,
parboil the cock, flay him, and stamp him in a stone mortar till his bones are broken. You must craw and gut him when you flay him.
Right, okay.
Then put the cock into 2 quarts of sack, this fortified white wine from Spain, and put it to 3 pounds of raisins, blades of mace, a few cloves. Put all these into a canvas bag, and a little before you find the ale has done working, put the ale and bag together into a vessel. In a week or 9 days' time, bottle it up and drink it.
So I guess, like, is the sack the kind of... I'm wondering if... Is this like them... Mm. So they're using the raisins, I guess, to... I don't know. Is there some fermentation going on here? Or is it just like a long... The raisins are just to make it sweeter? Or is that the sugar for this ferment? What's fermenting here? They don't have yeast in it. So I'm trying to think, like... Is it... I don't get it. Why do this?
Exactly. This is why it's my weirdest recipe. To me, it's just...
It's not even food. Why? It's just a drink.
It's just, yeah. I don't even think they're eating the chicken or anything. They're just...
What they ground it up.
Yeah, that they're taking an entire chicken and smushing it up, breaking its bones, parboiling it. And it has to be a male chicken. Don't know why. And then putting it in gallons of ale for... nearly 2 weeks, and then with some flavoring, like you say, raisins, mace, cloves, a bit of some dates, grounding them all up
to mask the taste of the now rotting chicken in your ale.
Exactly. You're just letting it imagine. Everyone knows, firstly, boiled chicken, really not my favorite form of chicken. Like, almost the worst, in fact, I would say.
Sure. Is that the issue in this, though?
It's not the biggest issue. But what you're doing is you're taking the worst form of chicken. You're doing that thing where, you know what chicken's like when you leave it in the fridge for a day or two? Mm. And how it stinks out the fridge? You're doing that, but just in a barrel of ale for 2 weeks. And then, like you say, letting it rot. And then drinking the ale.
Yeah.
And like, you're taking two things that on their own are fine, you know?
Yeah.
And then why are you combining them? And that's what I can't get my head around is, what is the purpose of this? Who decided? Okay, so I have a question. Okay. Do you think someone at some point, some weirdo said, you know what would be nice is if my ale tasted like 10-day-old boiled chicken?
I feel like no, but I think this definitely arose in like a pub or a tavern. Someone's got a plate of chicken in front of them. They're drinking ale. They're around the table with their mates, and they're thinking, like, they pop a bit of chicken in, then try guzzle down some beer, and they're like, hey, that wasn't bad. I wonder if you could make an ale. This is when there are a few ales deep.
A few pints in, yeah.
I wonder if you could make an ale that tastes like chicken. And that's where I think they tried it. And then... the first batch was obviously vomit-inducing. So then they were like, this needs some sweetener. So they put a bunch of raisins in there, a bunch of cinnamon and whatever else they put in. Sounds terrible.
Yeah, that's actually much more plausible. That hadn't occurred to me. I was going, either it was a real weirdo or it was similar scenario, pub, an inn that serves food, open keg of ale behind the counter. Someone, some novice waiter, accidentally drops a plate of flavored chicken into the barrel. I was like, oh shit, puts the lid back on. And then 10 days later, they start tapping the barrel and like, this tastes a bit funky. They open it up. Oh, there's some rotten cooked chicken in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's try that again. I think your explanation makes more sense, actually. I think, yeah.
Because some drunk person. I could, yeah. Honestly, like, I could see having a thought that stupid, like, at a pub at one point, you know. I could, and then we having a chat with friends over, like, whether that would taste good. And us, like, getting really passionate about it as well. Coming down on two sides of it would be terrible or it would be amazing. And then it has to culminate in us actually going back and trying it. So yeah, I mean, I can see how this would play out.
I'm glad you nice. Can. But would you try it if someone offered you this? By the way, this is a normal pint of ale.
I mean,
it's perfectly serviceable, drinkable ale, flavored with the meaty, rotting.
Well, it sounds chicken. Like it could make you throw up, as in like actually give you food poisoning. As long as it was safe, as long as it's like not going to make me die, I'd have a sip. Just out of curiosity, yeah.
Oh, that's a slippery slope. That's where you start. Become addicted to this stuff. Spend thousands of pounds on your custom-made cock ale.
I can only go to venues that serve cock ale, yeah. Yeah, they don't have it in the Wetherspoons, so, yeah.
Although you think maybe of all the places in the Britain to serve it, it might be Wetherspoons.
I do wonder if there's any, you know, craft beer is massive, obviously, right now, and a lot of those craft breweries are looking for, you know, some kind of edge, some kind of like a interesting niche. I wonder if there's any out there that are brave enough to give this a go and actually see if they can market it and sell it.
I think you're right. It's going to happen because we've already got all those weird stouts that are like chocolate milkshake stout or...
Yeah, they sound delicious. Yeah, this doesn't. There's like a vast chasm between chocolate milkshake stout and cock ale. Cock ale.
So have you got any more?
Well, there's one that I've just seen that I want to talk about. Well, very briefly. Yeah. Just because I think it culminates everything nicely. The name of the recipe is garbage.
Beautiful.
And
what?
I do wonder, like, is this? Yeah, where does that come from? Because the recipe is basically, it's made from chicken's heads, feet, livers, and gizzards. Basically everything that is just what they didn't eat from, you know, the animal. Everything that was basically chucked away or made into stock or something. They would take this and stew it in broth, pepper, cinnamon, cloves, mace, parsley, and sage, bread, served with ginger, salt, and the pièce de résistance, saffron.
Oh, no, what?
But it was basically just... Is garbage, what's the etymology of the word garbage? Like,
well, actually,
is it just a mishmash of things or throwaways things?
Weirdly, I think garbage, there's a Middle English word which is garbage or garbelage, which refers to the act of taking the inedible bits out of a chicken.
Oh, well, there you go.
Or birds.
That makes sense. Garbage.
Yeah, and spices, I think. It's taking all the waste bits, you know, like the skin from the spices and the rinsing out the guts of a chicken and stuff like that. So maybe it comes from that. Garbage.
So, so that's that's it, basically. Take all the inedible bits that no one wants from a chicken and stew it with every spice under the sun and bread. And then just stick that in your gob. Would you try that?
No.
No, not really.
No, I wouldn't. But it's definitely a classic poor man's dish, that is, isn't it? That's a classic.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Just using a waste stuff because we have nothing else. We're not going to waste a single crumb of all this stuff we've got. It's funny because now that adds a new meaning to the whole like complaining, oh, this is garbage. This tastes like garbage. It's like, specifically, this tastes like chicken's heads combined with all these spices and bread.
Do you know what, though? I've said all that, but have you seen that video where Jamie Oliver makes chicken nuggets in front of a bunch of kids?
I haven't.
And it's like the most monumental backfire, because what he's trying to say is like all the kind of gross bits of a chicken goes into chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
And he blends up the carcass, like the whole carcass, chicken feet and everything, blends it all up. And then, but then makes chicken nuggets, like, because he's a professional chef, basically makes gourmet chicken nuggets out of it. And then it's like, right, who'd eat that then, now that you know what's in it? And all the kids put their hands up.
I've not seen that.
So, I mean, amazing. Like, but the point is, I reckon all of this stuff still goes into the foods that we eat nowadays. Or like, you know, sliced processed meats probably have some chicken heads and stuff in it.
In fact, even the bread bit.
But it's like just less noticeable for us, because it's obviously like processed and, you know.
Yeah, we're 15 steps removed from the manufacturing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think coming full circle back round in a few hundred years' time, they're going to look at, people in the future are going to look at, I don't know, what's the grossest kind of processed meat that we can imagine nowadays? What was that one that people had in their sandwiches? It was like had a smiley face on the
ham the slices. Bear. It was like
the
was
bear.
It ham? Was it chicken? I actually don't know what meat that was.
Right? I'm not even sure. And look at us judging this. Yeah, what was it?
It was like a smiley bear.
Bully bear or something, wasn't it?
But it was dark. It was different shades. That was it. Now that I think about it, clearly dyed, like
Billy
color
Bear.
Dyed meat.
Billy Bear. Sliced sausage meat,
Oh, it was Billy sausage Bear. Meat, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still, there's no promise of what animal that comes from. Sausage meat. What is that?
Yeah. So, I mean, after all that, I think maybe the conclusion is maybe we're just being a bit judgy.
Quite possibly, yes. I mean, some of those recipes, I could see you making a comeback. I think the cat thing might even be a recipe that we could sell to certain parts of the world who have slightly less of an attachment to cats as pets.
No, the cat ship has sailed. You can't. I think of all the ones on this list, cats are the least likely to.
You think?
Yeah, okay. But also just from a practical point of view, like I can't imagine you get much meat on a cat. Even the recipe was like, has to be a
fat dish in the world.
Cat.
Not because people won't eat cats, but because cats are just so hard to catch to then put into this meal.
Yeah. But I mean, let us know what you think. Would you have tried any of these recipes? Which one do you think was the worst? And were there any important ones that you think we missed off the list? Let us know in the comments down below.
What's the answer to the riddle?
Oh yeah. Okay. I'm going to enjoy this. Okay. So do you want me to read it out again?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
If I'm holding a bee, what do I have in my eye? Do you know the answer?
A sting.
No, you don't have a sting. Okay, the answer is beauty, because beauty is in the eye of the bee holder. If I'm holding a bee, what do I have in my eye? Beauty, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Beholder.
No.
It's good. It's a good one. It's like wordplay.
I mean, it's good. I'm enjoying it because it's so stupid, but it's not. That's not a riddle. That's not a riddle.
Yeah, it is.
That's a dad joke. That's a terrible dad joke. That's not a riddle. Oh, man. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Oh, I'm going to see that in my Christmas cracker this year. Okay. I'll find that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for finding it. That was good.
I really enjoyed that one. Let me know in the comments as well if you managed to get that answer.
I feel so stupid I didn't get that. I feel so stupid.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Robin. It's been a lovely discussion. I'm feeling a bit peckish, beautiful. So I'm going to go and make some garbage, I think.
I'm actually feeling a bit sick now. We've talked about all that stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ugh. Too much cock ale, I guess.
Yeah, you have to hold back on the cock ale.
Cool. Well, thank you everyone so much for tuning in, and we shall see you next time.
Bye for now.